Good morning, everyone. Today's Daf in Nedarim is Mem Tes. We're about to start the sixth parak. We have a little bit to finish in the fifth parak of the Masechta, so we're going to take a turn back a page and go to Mem Tes and Medbeis, and we're going to start from the top of the Amud, just because it's really the beginning of the sugya. We did most of it yesterday, some of it yesterday, but anyway, that's where we're going to be getting today. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf Top, as well as Zeich and Nishmas, Libra Gabriela Bashmul, Mem Tes Amud Beis at the top. So there was a guy who had a son, and his son went off the derech, stealing flax. That's Iran's explanation. There are other explanations of exactly what the kid was doing, but just not a well-behaved kid. So the father said, in response to this kid, he's not going to get any of my property. In other words, so the father rethought some of his... He rethought some of how he's going to be bequeathing his money, and decided when writing his will that this kid's not going to get any of it. So he says that my property is going to be assigned to him. It does prompt a discussion that the Ron has over here in terms of, when he dies, isn't the property going to go to his son anyway? And even if it becomes assigned to him, so fine, so it's property that he can't benefit from. Okay, but the Ron says, let's assume the following, just so that we don't get involved in that discussion. And now, I mentioned this yesterday, I'll mention it again right now, and that is that the Ron assumes that there are two sons involved in this story. So one was a good boy and the other one was not. So the Gemara is focusing on the one that wasn't. And so basically what the father was saying is that all my Yerusha, in other words, he was originally entitled to half, but because he's a thief and he's not a good kid, so I'm going to work it out where the other son's going to get everything. Okay, that's the way the story sets up. So Amar Levi Hava Babaratsur Bamirabanamai. So they say to this guy now, do you want to think this through a little bit? Meaning, granted that your son is not well behaved, so he's a thief. Okay, but he's going to have children, and you don't know how the children is going to come out. The children may become Talmidei Chachamim. So his child, meaning your grandchild, may be a Talmid Chacham, and now you're going to leave him penniless. Like you want to think it through. So Amar Lahon. So he says. So the father says, oh, you know what? You're right. So we'll do the following. I'll make a kinyan now with my son, my thief, my son who's a thief. And the effect of the kinyan won't take place until my son, has a son who proves to be a Talmid Chacham. I'm just curious to know when exactly we reach that actual benchmark. Like, what does the son have to? The son has to make a siyum. Okay, but anyway, the grandson has to make a siyum. Anyway, however this actually works in terms of judging the grandchild being a Talmid Chacham. But again, so this is what they decide to do. So he decided to orchestrate a kinyan in which he'll do the kinyan now, even though the effect of the kinyan may not take place for 5, 10, 15, 20, maybe even 30 years from now. Okay, and it basically, this touches on a fundamental issue, really two fundamental issues. One fundamental issue is, can I make a kinyan where the entire purpose of the kinyan is there to become a second beneficiary? Okay, that's fundamental issue number one. So in other words, I'm not really gifting it to you, I'm not really selling it to you, I'm not really doing any transaction with you, you're just going to end up becoming a conduit for a secondary beneficiary. So the first issue, the fundamental one is, so does that work? Meaning, can I make a kinyan to someone where his entire purpose is to become just basically a link in the chain so that the item goes to somebody else? Okay. And then there's a secondary fundamental issue, and that is the following. In this particular kinyan, what's happening? So the act, the maisa kinyan, the act of the kinyan is being done now, even though the actual kinyan, the effect of the kinyan is not going to be taking place until years from now. And the secondary issue is, does that work? Okay, so there really are two fundamental issues in this Gemara right now, in this question that the Gemara is asking. So Amrei b'pumbasa mai, so that's exactly what the Gemara wants to know now, does this work? So Amrei b'pumbasa, k'ni amanas lahaknosu. So they ask the yeshiva pumbasa, whoever happened to have been the Rosh Yeshiva at the time, and he said, this is a k'ni amanas lahaknos. This is where I'm doing a kinyan, but only so that somebody else would receive it. In other words, this touches on the first issue, and that is having a secondary beneficiary. So the Gemara says, "V'chol kinyan amanas lahaknos lo kani." So the Yeshiva Pumbedisa rejects this out of hand because they don't feel that such a kinyan works. Meaning if I'm transacting and I'm dealing with the person who's going to receive it and he actually receives it, that's fine. But if he's only going to serve as a stepping stone for somebody else, so that's not a kinyan. A kinyan means that the person who receives it actually has to actually receive it. Okay, so that is the Pumbedisa's response to this question. And Rav Nachman Amar Kanihu Kani. And Rav Nachman says, no, it's fine, it works. Now, Rav Nachman is going to make his case in terms of how do we know that it works? In other words, so again, the original case the Gemara is dealing with is the father who is going to take half of his assets, be machned over to his grandson, who, by the way, may not even be born yet. Gemara didn't make that point clear, but he might not even be born yet, and the act of the kinyan is going to be done now, even though it's going to, even though its effect is going to be taking place years from now. And again, what the Gemara now is needs to, Rav Nachman says it's fine, it works, and what the Gemara needs to assume in order for this to work is two things. Number one, a kini amanas lahaknos works, meaning that I'm only creating a kinyan for a secondary beneficiary, meaning the father's giving it to the son, but only for one express purpose, so that the grandson gets it. That's point number one. And point number two is that the act, the Maisa Kinyan, is being done now, even though the effect is going to be taking place years from now. And Rav Nachman says, yeah, it's fine. And the Gemara now is going to make a case. So Gemara says, look, let's take a look at a Kinyan suitor. Anytime you do a Kinyan suitor, now, as I mentioned yesterday, I'll just repeat again today, the most popular time that we're familiar with Kinyan suitor is before Pesach. Right? We sell our chametz. We don't sell our chametz. We appoint the rabbi to sell the chametz. That appointment to the rabbi to sell our chametz is done through a Kinyan suitor. So what happens? The rabbi picks up a handkerchief, a pencil, or in today's day and age, you'll probably see him pick up his cell phone. And hand it to you, and good, and you hand it back, and okay, great. And that's it, Kinyan Seder, the magic of Kinyan Seder. So, Chalipin. The truth of the matter is that there are two forms of Chalipin. One is where there's an actual barter taking place, and the other, which is what we're talking about, is there's no real barter taking place. It's just simply an affirmation that, yes, you're going to be my agent, and so anything of any value can be used in order just of swapping of the hands to validate that this is actually happening. Good. So the Gemara says, let's take a look at Kinyan Seder. Okay, so here. Here I am now, the rabbi before Pesach, and I'm holding a napkin in my hand. And so, okay, you want to sell me the chametz, or again, that's not really accurate. You want to appoint me the person to sell your chametz. So here, take my handkerchief. He takes it. What happens right after that? He gives it back to me. So you saw what just happened? I mean, there was nobody there, but right, I handed it to somebody, and he just gave it right back to me. Okay, so that means now that there was a primary beneficiary, the person I handed it to, and there was a secondary beneficiary. And everyone understands in the world of Kinyan Seder that when I hand it to him, he's going to hand it right back to me. Okay? That's a Kinyan Amanas Lahaknos. So this is Rav Nachman's argument that a secondary beneficiary is perfectly legitimate. And I'm Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi says to Rav Nachman, how could you use Kinyan Seder as a model to prove your point? So Rav Ashi says to Rav Nachman, here, let's consider the following. First of all, in the world of Kinyan Seder, I hand the napkin over to him. Does he have to hand it back to me? Maybe not. When the rabbi gives you his cell phone, do you have to give it back to him? Maybe not. That's Rav Ashi's first point. And furthermore, and the Ran says at this juncture, the Gemara, like even if you think my first point is no good, like Rav Ashi says, okay, maybe my first point is not legitimate. Maybe no. Either when you hand it to the rabbi, he's got to hand it back to you. But Rav Ashi says, but let's tackle this from a different point altogether, and that is, Sudra kini amanas lahaknos, v'kini min hashta, halei nechsein dahadein. Sorry, v'kini min hashta. Look, in the world of Kinyan Seder, like when you go to the rabbi and you appoint him to be your agent, so when is the Kinyan occurring, and when is the effect of the Kinyan occurring? Right now. Meaning, I'm going to appoint you my agent. I'm not appointing you my agent in the future. I'm appointing you my agent right now. So when we do a Kinyan Seder, so it's true. I hand it to him, and he's going to hand it right back to me. And the truth of the matter is, we all know that's going to happen. But at least in that case over there, the effect of the Kinyan is taking place right now. To which halay nechs in the hadayin lema zaykana lichi have barbreitz or b'mirabanan lichi have hadusujalamare. But look, in the case of the grandson, where the father now is making a kinyan, so that his estate does eventually go to his grandson, he's doing the kinyan now. And even if it's a kinyan amanahas lahaknas, and even if you think the secondary beneficiary is not a problem, but you know what is a problem? It's very simple. There's a time lapse between the act of the kinyan and the effect of the kinyan. The act of the kinyan is occurring now. The effect of the kinyan is not going to be taking place till months from now, years from now. So the Gemara says, on that regard, you can't compare kinyan siddur to our discussion over here. Yes.
The other case of barter with Khalipin, it is like that, because the animal that's going...
Yeah, that's correct. That's why I pointed out. In other words, there are really two Khalipins. There's one which is just a straight barter. In that case, you're right. In other words, the moment I pull on one,
right,
the other... Right, correct. The Gemara is not talking about the classic barter. The Gemara is focusing on the siddur, meaning, what, you know, the handkerchief, the napkin. So the lechi have a hadus or jilamari. So Amalei Rav la Rav Nachman v'hamatanus beis charan dekani amanas lahaknos so v'loka kane. So the Gemara says, okay. So now where are we in the Gemara? Again, as I pointed out, there are two fundamental issues. Number one, the first fundamental issue is secondary beneficiary, meaning I'm giving it to somebody only so that a second person gets it. Does that work? Yes or no? So the Gemara equivocated on that point. The second fundamental issue is doing a Maisa Kinya now, even though the effect is taking a long time from now. Okay. On the first issue, the Gemara, Pumbedisa was not happy with the idea, but Rav Nachman was perfectly fine. Meaning, if I'm giving it to somebody so that there be a secondary beneficiary, so Rav Nachman said that that's fine. Meanwhile, the Gemara says, let's take a look at our case of yesterday. Remember the Mishnah of yesterday. The guy made a neder against his father, right? He had it with his father, and unfortunately, he made a neder that his father's not going to get any benefit from him. And the story continued where this guy now made a chasna for his son, and he wanted his father to be at his son's, right? Too many pronouns, right? It makes it unclear. He wanted his father to be at his father's grandson, meaning his son's chasna. Good. So, or if you want to make this even simpler, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Yitzchak is making a chasna for his son Yaakov, and Yitzchak wants Avram to be at the chasna of Yaakov. Okay, good. So, and the problem is that Yitzchak made a neder against Avram, and Avram can't get benefit from Yitzchak, and all the food and the catering hall and everything belong to Yitzchak. So, what did Yitzchak do in our Mishnah? So he gave it to a third party and said to the third party, here, you take it so that you give it to my father. Okay? And the Mishnah said, oh, that's no good. Because that's subterfuge. That's harama. And the Mishnah said, you can't do that. And the Gemara now just wants to know, wait a second. Secondary beneficiary, Rav Nachman was perfectly fine with it. Even Rav Ashi, who at first kind of balked at the idea, even Rav Ashi ultimately was okay with it, seemingly. And so, but the Gemara says, but it didn't work in our Mishnah. But the Gemara says, that's not really a question. So let's see how the Gemara deals with this. And our Mishnah doesn't seem like secondary beneficiary works. So the Gemara says, Zimna Namarle. Now this question apparently got tossed around a bunch of times, and he had more than one prepared answer for this question. One suggestion is, Mishum Desudasa Mochechas Alav. Answer number one is, don't give me the case of the father marrying off his son so that now his own father can go to the wedding. Come on, that's a case of harama. Meaning, it is unusual, like we said yesterday, that a person is going to go through all the trouble and all the expense of making a chasna and then gift it over to somebody else. That's weird. And you know what's happening. What's happening over there is that he's just doing it so to get around his neder that he made. So the Gemara says, that's why it doesn't work over there. It's not a monetary issue, it's a neder issue. And furthermore, the Gemara says, Vizin namalei, a Rebbe Lazi hidam rafilo vitar asa b'muda harna. So, and the Gemara then says, and another prepared answer that he had is, look, we're going like Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that vitar is asa b'hana. This goes way back. Not way back, sorry. That's an exaggeration. It goes back about a week ago, where we had a discussion in the Gemara, more than a week, where regarding If I make a neder and I can't get benefit from somebody, I cannot walk on his property. Now, walking on somebody's property, I'm not talking about using his house as a cut-through. Just simply stepping on his property. There is no monetary issue. In other words, generally speaking, in the world of monetary law, if I step on somebody else's property, am I a thief? The answer is, of course not. Just walking on somebody else's property. Now, if he doesn't want you walking on the property, and he put a perimeter around the property, and he calls, and you're trespassing, okay, that's, then we could talk. But just to walk on somebody's property is non-issue. And meanwhile, according to Rabbi Eliezer, who we saw earlier, he says that if a person made a neder against another, and he's not allowed to benefit from that other person, so he can't even walk on the property. And as the Ron explains over here, what does that show you? That there's monetary law, and then there's nedarim. So, look, in terms of general monetary law, you can establish a secondary beneficiary even from the very beginning. From a monetary standpoint, that's fine. In our Mishnah, we're not talking about monetary law. We're talking about neder. Neder is different. That's all. So the Gemara says that's the two different prepared answers that he gave to this question. Okay, there is a Ron, it's important, I'm not going to go through it right now, but I just simply will highlight it, on the top of Mem Tesamad Aleph. It starts at the very top, and it goes to halfway down the Amud, and it discusses, we've just covered two very basic issues. One is establishing a secondary beneficiary from the very beginning, from the origination point of a transaction, and number two is having the Maisa Kinyan done now, even though the effect happens later. And on those issues, who do we passing like, and you take a look at the Ron, and the Ron brings down a host of opinions. There's no consensus amongst the Rishonim how we rule on both of these issues. So look at the look at.
Shmuel's opinion.
Huh?
Does Rav Nachman usually reflect?
Yes. Yes. The answer to that question is yes. Again, it's a more involved discussion. I'm just highlighting it right now. Let's just finish yesterday's daf, and then we go on to today's daf. Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, Amru Chachamim Kol Matana Sheinu Shemikdishu Teimugudeshes Eino Matana. So look back at our Mishnah. Remember, the Mishnah said, you want to know if something is a gift? It's very simple. See if the recipient can be makdashit. If the recipient can be makdashit, it's a gift, or meaning it's a transaction. But if the recipient can't do that, meaning that the string that is attached is such that where you receive it, you can't be makdashit, that's not a matana. Okay. And yesterday we did raise the issue, the Ron raised the issue, about matana amanas lahachzir. How could that work? That doesn't seem like the recipient can be makdashit. Okay, that goes back to yesterday's daf. But anyway, so teimakdashit ena matana. Kol la'asuye mai. The Gemara says, look at the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah uses the wording of kol. Right? In every case means that we're coming to include case. Lav la'asuye hai milsa, deshaja bekipe. So the Gemara says, doesn't it mean to include the very case that was brought up at the very beginning of where we started today, meaning the top of Amud Beis, where the guy tried to make a transaction where he's going to give his assets to his son, but only so that his grandson inherited. And isn't the point of the Mishnah that shouldn't work? Because again, when the son receives it, can he be makdashit? Of course not. Because his only purpose in receiving the assets of his father is only then to give it to his son. So he doesn't have the ability to be makdashit. So doesn't that mean that kinyan altogether is no good? So the Gemara says, well, Gemara says no. That's not what the Mishnah is coming to discuss, but rather lasuya lishna basra deshmaita de Rava, but rather it's coming to include the second version of Rava. Remember we discussed yesterday? Second version of Rava is that you can give the food over to a third party, and the third party can give it to the muda, the subject of the neder, but you can't say anything. Once you say something, so then that is going to uproot the entire. It's going to reveal your subterfuge. It's going to show that this is harama, and then you can't do it. The Gemara says that's what the Mishnah is making reference to. Hajjan al Chashudfin. That's the end of the fifth parak of the Masechta. And this morning now we begin the sixth parak of the Masechta. Okay. This is a topic that we covered earlier, but we get to see more of this discussion. And that is as follows. I make a neder against something. What am I making a neder against? So obviously I'll identify what I'm talking about. The meaning of the words generally follow how people understand them. Meaning, b'nedarim holchinach aloshem ne adam. So even though, as we discussed last time, we're going to see it again today, even if the Torah gives a definition of something, if that's not how people talk, you know, well, language evolves, language changes, and definition of words change. If that's not how people talk, so then your neder doesn't cover it. Your neder only covers that which is generally understood of what the quote-unquote modern definition of the word is. Okay? Because again, in a world of neder, there has to be an agreement of your word and your mind. In other words, the words that come out are really a reflection of what you're thinking. What the words are generally what the modern understanding of those words are. You'll see what I mean through all these examples. We're starting at the very top of Mem Tes Amud Aleph. I know them and I'm a vushal. So that's it. You're done with cooked foods. And you make a neder and you're saying, yeah, I'm no longer going to eat by neder any cooked foods. Motar b'tzliv v'shaluk. So if the meat was cooked, so then that you can't eat it because your neder binds you not to eat it. But if it was either roasted, tzli, roasted over an open fire, or, excuse me, thank you, or shaluk. The Ran over here says shaluk means, I'm going to sound like I know what I'm talking about, parboiled. Right, not fully cooked. Now, the Ran admits that that's not always what shaluk means. Shaluk sometimes means overcooked, but that's not what we're talking about over here. Shaluk in this context means that it was partially cooked. So that is not included in your neder. Your neder was mevushal. Mevushal means I'm not eating something that's fully cooked. So if it's roasted or if it's partially cooked, that doesn't fall under your neder. Amar, second case of the Mishnah. Konim tafshil she'ini tohem. Now here he prohibits eating tafshil. Now tafshil literally means a cooked food. But again, we're not interested in the literal translation. We're interested in how is this word generally understood in circa the year 200 of the Mishnayos. And by the way, with a lot of these halachas, like in other words, you can imagine that if the definition changes, meaning if the modern definition changes, so then obviously, you know, the effect of the neder would change as well. So what does it mean when he says tafshil? Tafshil sheino tohem, asur b'maaseh kedera. So anything cooked in a pot. I'm sorry. Asur b'maaseh kedera, rach, umutar ba'ava. He can't eat anything that's soft, but he can eat something that's thick. Okay, what does that mean? Basically, and we'll see this in the Gemara, the Ran explains over here. Basically, when you say the word tafshil, you mean something that you're gonna put together with your bread. Like some condiment for the bread. So if it's like soft and runny and you scoop it up with your bread, like a runny egg, so then that is considered tafshil. If it's something where it's eaten on its own, it has a thick consistency and seen by its own, so the Gemara says that is not included in your neder. That's not the denotation of the word tafshil. Umutar bebeitzah tarmuta. If it's a hard-boiled egg, it's probably not the best way to translate it. But in other words, an egg that's not eaten with bread. You know, if you have a runny egg, I know a lot of people don't like their eggs runny, but if you have a runny egg, so you basically get some bread to mop up all the, you know, all that good stuff. If, however, the egg is really hard-boiled and it's eaten by itself, so that's not under the definition of tafshil. Uvedlas ha-re-mutza. And also gourd. Gourd that's... also that's cooked really well. Hanoner mimaisa kedera, the third case of the Mishnah. A person makes a neder that he's not going to eat maisa kedera. Ein aser ela mimaisa ratchasa. So maisa kedera is a reference to anything which is cooked in a pot, and it basically refers to anything that is cooked in a hot pot. The Gemara later on will explain that a little bit better. I'm a konim hayora the kedera. If a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat anything which goes into a pot, she'enetoim, asa b'chol mit bashlam b'kedera. There, taking, in other words, that's a very literal neder, and therefore anything that goes into a pot is going to be asa. In other words, the man's going to eat just, or the woman, she can make a neder also. We saw that we heard that yesterday in Mincha. During laning, so the so then they're going to be also from anything that's cooked. They can only eat raw food. Okay, so again, the basic rule of the Mishnah is when it comes to neder hochadach haloshem bnei adam, we follow how generally people understand these terms, and the terms that we discuss in our Mishnah are mevushal, tafshil, maisa kedera, and hayori lekedera. Okay, four different terms that are discussed in the Mishnah, and the Mishnah tells us what they mean. Tanya. The Gemara immediately goes after the first term of the Mishnah. First term of the Mishnah was ha-mevushal. And what do we explain? Mevushal means something that's cooked, meaning cooked in a liquid. If it was roasted or partially cooked, that doesn't fall under the category of your neder. Tanya Rav Yoshia oser. Rav Yoshia says it's prohibited. What's prohibited? Roasted. Meaning, even though you said cooked, included in cooked is roasted. Meaning, what they're arguing about, well, the Gemara is going to explain, so why don't we just read on in the Gemara. And the Gemara says, look, I don't have an absolute proof that even though you said the word mevushal, roast is included, but the Gemara says, but I can at least give you like a little hint from the Torah. Shenamar, the Pasuk says, Vayivashla Pesach Ba'esh, they cooked. Right, vayivashlu. They cook the Karban Pesach in fire. Now, we all know, you're not allowed to cook the Karban Pesach in water. It has to be roasted. One of the basic halachas regarding the Karban Pesach. Right, sleeve and not, right, lo sechlu mimenu na, uvashal mevushal b'mayim. Ki im tzli esh. Torah says regarding the Karban Pesach, it has to be roasted. Can't be cooked. And meanwhile, the Navi in Divrei Hayamim describes what's the process of Karban Pesach cooking. Vayivashlo. That does not mean that you can't cook it. You can't cook it. What it just simply means is that the word bishul is a loose term, and it could mean cooked. It could also mean roasted as well. So, I'm sorry. Vayivashlo, I should have read the whole pasuk as a quote in the Gemara. Vayivashlo Pesach ba'esh kamishpat. Okay, so we have a debate between our Mishnah and the Braisa. Our Mishnah says that when you say, I'm not going to eat mevushal, it only means food cooked in liquid. And according to the Braisa, the opinion of Rabbi Yoshia is that, no, it also includes roasted food as well. Because mevushal is a looser term. So the Gemara says, Lema b'hakim eflagi. The Gemara suggests maybe this is the core of the debate. Rabbi Yoshia savar halach achar lashon Torah v'tana dilan savar b'nedarim halach achar lashon b'nei Adam. Maybe their issue is a very fundamental issue. Meaning, how do we define words? Do we define words as they're found in Tanakh? Or do we define words as they are generally conversed amongst people? The Gemara says, maybe the Mishnah holds Lashon B'nei Adam, the general conversation between people. And Rav Yoshia says, no, the definition of words follows Tanakh. The Gemara says, lo. The Gemara says, no, that's not a acceptable way to explain the Machlokas. The Kuli Alma B'nedarim Halach Acher Lashon B'nei Adam. The Gemara says, no. It is the most basic rule. I don't know about the, but it is one of the most basic rules in the world of Nedarim that the definition of words follow how conversation goes, how modern conversation goes. Marki Asre, Marki Asre. Asra de Tana Dilan, Litzli Karelate Sli, Ulamavusha Karelate Mavushal, Ba'asra de Rabbi Yoshua, Afilitzli Karelate Mavushal. So, period. The Gemara says, look, what they're really debating about is, it's not even a debate. It's just a question of how different communities speak. In the community of our Mishnah dealt with a community where the word mevushal meant only food cooked in a liquid. So your neder didn't include roasted food. And Rav Yoshia's community, when they used the word mevushal, it was a looser term. And you can even refer to roasted food as well. V'akra nasiv, the Gemara is just bothered by one simple question. Didn't Rav Yoshia bring a pasuk? So the Gemara says, lo, asmachta ba'am. I'm sorry. V'akra nasiv lo, asmachta ba'am. The Gemara says, he didn't bring the pasuk as a source. It was just asmachta. It was just a way of, you know, Tanakh. And this is just a support to the idea, but it's not a proof. It's not the source of the idea. Karnim tav, shall we continue in the Gemara?
It's a smachta or is a real source?
No, in this particular case, first of all, he's pointing a pasuk from Divrei Hayamim. It's not a pasuk in Chumash. So already we knew it was an asmachta. And the right halacha comes out from Torah. Halacha rarely, almost never comes out of Nach, out of Nevi'im and Ksuvim. And in this context, the Gemara feels very strongly that no one disputes the basic idea that the definition of words follow conversation. Modern conversation, and not the way Tanakh describes it. So the Gemara, therefore,
it depends on the context.
It depends on how we normally understand things. What is the modern definition of words? I'll make mention of it. The Ran does quote a Gemara Yerushalmi, which doesn't seem to agree with our Gemara in terms of in terms of that there's a unanimous consensus that that by neder hochanachalosh bnei adam. Okay, I mentioned it. Okay, good. Now let's go on. The konim tafsha v'chule. V'ham mitafsha. I'm sorry. We're up to now number two in the Mishnah. What was number two in the Mishnah? If I make a neder against tafshil. Okay, point number one in the Mishnah was Mevushal. Okay, we covered that. Now, point number two in the Mishnah was, I say the word Tafshil. Tafshil is generally understood as those foods that I eat with bread. So the Gemara says, V'ama mi Tafshil nadar, Amar Abaye, Haitanu kolmid demetachu beirifta, Tafshil kari lei. Good. The Gemara says it right here. I said it already in the Mishnah, but only because I prepared, and I knew the Gemara. So here's where the Gemara says that the word tafshil generally means foods that are eaten with bread, the condiments, if you will. Soft foods, runny foods, not hard foods. Hard foods are not eaten with bread. If a person makes a neder against tafshil, including that is all different types of cooked foods, he's not allowed to eat roasted, cooked, shaluk, again, partially cooked, overcooked, mevushal, v'aser, behatriot, rakot, and he cannot eat small gourd, shachol and ochlem behem, pitan, because the sick person eats it together with his bread. The Braisa makes exactly the point that when we say tafshil, we're referring to foods that are soft and have a loose consistency and are generally eaten together with bread. Okay, Inu the Gemara says, now, the last point that we just saw on the Braisa is that small gourd is excellent for a sick person. And now the Gemara is bothered by that medical advice that's given by the Gemara. Ini, v'ha Reb Yirmiyah Chalosh, I'm sorry, Reb Yirmiyah Chalosh, Gemara tells the following story of Reb Yirmiyah getting sick. Ala gabei, hahu asya, the doctor comes in. Okay, house calls, remember those days? La asya, in order to provide healing for him. Chaza kra, by the way, I don't remember those days. And I never got visited by a doctor. Okay, but anyway, I heard once upon a time that those things happen. Now the doctor saw that there was pumpkin in Rav Yirmiyah's house. Now again, Rav Yirmiyah was the ill patient, and shavke venafek. So the doctor runs out of the house. Okay, this is reminiscent of this I remember. Right, doctors in the good old days, a little more stubborn, right, a little less user-friendly, if you will. So the doctor runs out of the house, and the doctor says, that's ridiculous. Right, Rav Yirmiyah is sick, and he's got cooked gourd in his house? Like, that's nonsense. Amar malach mavsa islay ledein bebesa. Now, I gave you the nice version of the way the doctor said it. The Gemara does not give us a nice version. Doctor says, you know, the Malcham Avis is in his house. Malcham Avis over here is a euphemism for that gourd, for that pumpkin. Apparently, this doctor felt that pumpkin is the worst thing in the world for a sick person to eat. V'ana e'ol asa yasei, and now you're asking me to go in and heal him? Meaning he's involved in such self-destructive behavior. Of eating gourd while being sick, and you want me to go in and heal him? Look, I'm a doctor. I'm not a miracle worker. Like, that's ridiculous. Anyway, the point the Gemara is trying to make is that gourd is not good for a sick person, and meanwhile, the Braisa sounds like gourd is excellent for a sick person. Gemara gives not one, not two, but three answers to this question. So, lokasha habirichi habashune. So the Gemara says, one will make a distinction between soft gourd and hard gourd. Okay, soft gourd apparently is very good for the sick person. That's what the Braisa was describing, and the hard gourd is bad for a person. That's what the doctor saw in Rav Yirmiyah's house. A second answer, Rava Bar Ula Amar Habakra Gufe Habigave. We're going to talk about the exterior of the gourd versus the interior of the gourd. Habigave Dekra. Amar Rav Yehuda Lulave Dekra Besoka. Rav Yehuda says that the heart of a squash, I don't really see it. I guess you know the stuff that you scoop out from the inside. I don't know. Maybe the seeds, maybe. But anyway, lulavi dekra besoka. If you cook that together with beets, or lulavi dekidna bekutcha. This is like really popular nowadays, right? Heart of flax, right? Hemp seeds. Okay, I don't know who's in the who's into this, but I try not to be into it. But I'm going to report, and there was that my wife did get heart of flaxseed. Okay, I'm trying it. Anyway, it's in the Gemara. So lulava dekitna bekutcha. So you take the heart of flax, you take hemp seeds, and you put it in your, you know, I'm giving a modern definition, and you put it in your yogurt. The Gemara says that's fantastic. And oh, by the way, v'davar zeh asur la'omer b'fnei amaretz. And by the way, the Gemara says don't popularize this information. Don't tell the populace that this is good. Why not? So the Ron over here says it's not good information to publicize. Kedei shelo, I'm just reading the Ron at the bottom. Kedei shelo ya'akru ha'pishton lekach. Because once they get catch wind of the fact that these flax seeds are excellent for your general constitution, so people are going to go out to the fields and start destroying the flax and the flax plant. So don't let this information out. Right, keep it close to the vest. Anyway, that is a second possible answer. So again, in the second answer, the Gemara is saying that the exterior of the pumpkin, that's no good for the sick person. The interior of the pumpkin, I guess maybe the seeds is what we're describing. The lulava, the heart of the gourd. So that's good for the sick person. That's what the Mishnah was describing. A third possible answer, Rava Amar Cholin Rabbanan. Rava says that, look, in the Braisa, we weren't really talking about sick people. We were talking about people who are weaker. That's all the Braisa meant. And by the way, when we say we're talking about weak people, who we're talking about? Rabbanan. Okay. If you have a picture of rabbis being, you know, weaker, like a little, so to say, a little nerdier, if you will, that picture actually is painted by the Gemara. Meaning the Gemara says that the Chachamim are weaker. And the Ron over here explains, and the reason why that is because we know that when you learn Torah and you really apply yourself to the study of Torah, it's tashash kocho. It weakens an individual.
Delicate.
Right. So it makes a person, that's a nicer way to say it. So it makes a person like more delicate. Good. So the Gemara says that's what the Mishnah is talking about. So Rav Latami, Dama Rav, the Gemara says, and you should know that Rav is consistent, because there's a statement that he makes, the statement's found in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara here quotes it. When we daven, we daven every day, right? Right, I'm sure you've heard, right? More than that, I'm sure we all do it. But when we daven every day, so we know that when somebody's sick, so we're going to daven for that person who's sick. So, and we do it every day. Now, this is a Rosh Hashanah topic. This is not our topic for today. I just mention it. And that is that we know that our fate is sealed on Rosh Hashanah. If our fate is sealed on Rosh Hashanah, so then, now we are more than halfway through the year. Okay, I'm here to report we're more than three quarters of the way through the year. Rosh Hashanah is coming up in, I hate to be the bearer of this news, but yeah, 10 weeks. So so when we daven every day, so the Gemara says, who do we hold like? So the Gemara says, come on, Rabbi Yossi. So we hold like Rabbi Yossi, meaning there's a debate between the Chacham and Rabbi Yossi whether our fate is sealed on Rosh Hashanah and that's it. And then according to the Chachamim, there would simply be no point in davening the rest of the year because HaKadosh Baruch Hu already decided what's going to be happening to this year, as opposed to Rav Yossi, who says, no, that we're judged every single day. And therefore, according to Rav Yossi, therefore, it behooves us to daven every single day. Okay, and there is a lengthier discussion in the Gemara. Is the Gemara really suggesting that according to the Chachamim, there's no point in davening every day? And that's a lengthier discussion, and we're not going to have the discussion right now. We only bring in this Gemara in Rosh Hashanah right now just to accentuate one point. And that is, we're davening for people who are sick. But if you look carefully, it says, Al Kitzire V'Al Merie. People who are sick and people who are sick. What does that mean? So the Midamer Kitzir Maria Shmamina Kitzire Kitzire Mamish. Those are two different types of sick. Kitzire are people who are really sick. The Ron explains over here, like they're fed up with life because they're so sick, meaning they're really sick. And Maria are just simple people who are just more delicate. Right, the Talmid Chachamim. So again, the idea is another way to suggest, when the gourd is bad for the sick person, does not mean for the people who are delicate. Meaning the Talmid Chachamim, who are a little more delicate, a little more frail, so they can eat gourd, that's fine. What the doctor, when he walked into Rabbi Yirmiyah's house, Rabbi Yirmiyah was really sick, meaning he was really ill. And the gourd is terrible for somebody who is ill, and that's what the doctor was calling the Malcham of us. Okay. Moving on. Mutar ba'ava. Again, we're still discussing the point of Tavshil in the Mishnah. Tavshil, as the Gemara explained on the Amud Aleph, is a reference to soft food that generally you eat together with bread. But if it's a hard food, right, it's a food where the consistency of it is hard, and you don't normally have it as a condiment with bread, that's not a Tavshil. The Gemara says, Masin from the Lo Kebab Bavliai. The Gemara says, you know, Babylonians have a very odd and unusual eating habit, which is, Am Rabbi Zera, Bavlai Tifshai, Rabbi Zera refers to the literal translation, those dumb Babylonians. I know that's harsh. You know, they spoke harsher. They were just honest, right? Maybe a little too honest, but I don't want to judge. Anyway, Rabbi Zeira says to Bavlai Tifshai, dumb Babylonians, Achle Lachma Balachma. You know what they use as a condiment for bread? They use bread. In other words, they use not a soft, runny food together with their bread, but they kind of... they take a hard baked good and they put it on top of their bread. Dumb Babylonians. So anyway, but you see that the point the Gemara is communicating is that in Bavel, it's not uncommon for Babylonians to eat a hard food together with bread. So therefore, if you lived in Bavel and you made a neder on Tavshil, that would include hard food as well. Now there are two gears of the Gemara. Either it's Nikdane Dehutzel or Nikrani Dehutzel. The basic idea is Rav Chista said, look, we asked the food experts the following question. Hadein Daisa Hechemale Lemechle. Together with a Daisa. Daisa is basically oatmeal, like hot oatmeal. Right, say it's cracked wheat together, or cracked grain, I should say, mixed together with water, and it's basically looks like your hot oatmeal. So, is it dechite belachma dechite, udesar belachma desare? Should I match my porridge with my bread? Meaning, when I eat wheat porridge, should I eat it with wheat bread? And when I have barley porridge, should I eat it with my barley bread? Or should I cross them? Should my wheat porridge go with my barley bread and vice versa? And again, the Gemara is just simply giving us a description of some of the dietary habits of the people living in Babel. Rava Achle Bechasise. Rava would eat the flour of roasted grain. Again, it's what we would... It's like what we would call nowadays... I'm just giving an analogy. It's like cereal, basically. Rabba Rav Huna Ashkechel Rav Huna Deka Achol Daisa Betz B'yosei. Rabba Rav Huna found Rav Huna eating his porridge using his fingers. Okay, no spoon, using his finger. Amalei Amai Ka Achol Mar B'yadei. So he says, really? You're eating with your fingers? Amalei Hachi Amarav. So he says, what do you mean? I have this as a tradition. Now, again, all these Gemaras are going to sound a little bit strange. Like, what are they talking about? The not only the diet, but the means of eating, it's all part of the Torah personality. Meaning it's, the Torah personality is not just the mitzvahs of the Torah, not just the halacha, but even something as simple as eating. The Rambam, right, we all know this. I'm just, I'm sharing with you information you already know. The Rambam spends a considerable amount of time in the beginning of Mishnah Torah talking about when you should eat, how you should eat, with whom you should eat. Like, in other words, it's all part of the Torah personality. So these Gemaras, they sound a little funny, but really it speaks to, just generally speaking, how a Torah personality should behave, and even to the point where I eat my food with my fingers. Like, I know that sounds funny, but like, I got that as a tradition from Rav. So Amar Le Amai Ka'achem Mar Biyadei Amar Le Hachi Amar Rav Dais Betz Basab Basim. When you eat your dice, when you eat your porridge with your fingers, it's delicious. It's sweet. V'chol dechem betartin. V'chol dechem betlas. And two fingers, three fingers. Can you imagine? So, can you imagine? Amar Le Rav Lechia Berei. V'chein Amar Le Rav Huna Le Rav Berei. Rav says to his son Chia, and Rav Huna also said the same thing to his son Rabba. Mizamnu lechalamechal daisa ad parsa. I'll give the rhymes explanation. You get invited to eat daisa, again, like this hot porridge, this hot oatmeal. So you should walk a parsa, meaning it's worth it. But lamechal bisra, this Gemara really speaks to me. Lamechal bisra, but let's say you get invited to eat meat. So I'm sorry, bisra deturah. not just any meat, but ox meat. So atalsa parson. So there, it's kedai to walk three parsa, all right, for a meal of cooked ox meat. Amalei rav lechia brei v'chein amalei rav huna l'rabba brei v'chol meidam lo tiflo kamei rabcha. Right, don't spit in front of your Rebbe. Right, it's spitting, even not so long ago. You know, spitting was, you know, acceptable behavior. But still, even when spitting was kind of an acceptable behavior, right? In the old days, they had the spittoons, right? So you wouldn't spit on the floor. That's disrespectful. You know, you had something where to spit in. But the Gemara says, but don't spit in front of your Rebbe. Meaning that's a lack of kavod to your Rebbe. So generally speaking, you want to spit, that's fine. Don't spit in front of your Rebbe. Labar min krav adaisa. However, certain accumulations of saliva after eating certain foods are just simply not good, to the point where even in front of your Rebbe, it's acceptable. Because it's just simply, for whatever reasons I cannot explain, these kind of accumulations are just simply not good. Shein domam lepsila shel aver. Gemara, again, just speaking in strong language, just to communicate the idea, it's like eating hot lead. So in other words, if you get some sort of aggregate of saliva because of the dice, because of the porridge or the gourd, so you spit it out, and even in front of your Rebbe. And even if you're in front of the king, again, it's either you spit it out or it's like swallowing hot lead. So even in front of the king, you'll spit it out. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Chanachal, Daisa, Betzbasa, V'chanachal, Behutza. And the Gemara tells us the eating habits of Tanayim. I mean, we're really, you know, the Gemara obviously feels that this is important. Some eat, one Tana eats the hot porridge with his fingers, and the other eats it with a hutsa, like the leaf of a palm branch. So, Amalei dachal behutsa la dachal betzbasayin masayat tamachin et sawascha. And you'll forgive me. I mean, the Gemara here is just indelicate, but I'll just say it. So basically, you're eating your excrement. In other words, you're eating your porridge with your finger. And, you know, and obviously after going to the bathroom and after relieving yourself, so, you know, you take care of yourself, you're hygienic. But at the same time, however, there's still going to be a little bit stuck between your fingernail and your finger. And now you're going to take that hand and you're going to stick your food into the porridge and you're going to put it in your mouth, and that's disgusting. So, Amalei dachal betzbasayin dachal behutsa. Oh, really? Do you think that's disgusting? You know, well, you know what you're doing? You're taking your again, it's not a spoon, but it's kind of like a branch, and you're dipping it into the porridge, and then you're eating it, and then you're taking it and you're dipping it back into the porridge, and then you're eating it, and you're basically eating your saliva. And maybe somebody else's saliva as well. So Gemara says, you know, they both were put off by the way each other eats their porridge. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Isa Kamea, Belufsin. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon were presented with overcooked figs. Rabbi Yehuda Achel, Rabbi Shimon Lo Achel. There were two viewpoints on whether or not this is something good to eat or not good to eat. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda, Maitam Lo Achel Mar. Amalei Rabbi Shimon, Elo En Yotzim Bibnei Ba'ayim Kol Iker. So he says, you know, they go in, they don't come out. They stick to your intestines. And so I'm not interested in that, meaning I don't want any food to linger inside of me. Okay? So Amalei Rabbi Yehuda, Kol Shekein Shenis Machalei Lamachar. Rabbi Yehuda says, really? Perfect. So that means then that they're going to stay inside of you, and it doesn't produce a lot of waste? Perfect. I'll eat it. And so good for today and also good for tomorrow, right? Tomorrow I'll still remain satiated by the fact that I'm eating these overcooked figs. Rabbi Yehuda v'yasa kamei de Rabbi Tarfon amalei Rabbi Tarfon ayam panechet suvim. So Rabbi Yehuda was in front of Rabbi Tarfon, and he says, and Rabbi Tarfon says to him, today you're glowing, you're shining. So amalei emes yatsu avadecha l'stad ve'evi olanu treidim v'achanum. So he says, oh, that's very simple. Yesterday they went out to the field, they found tardin, beets. Right? Is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. They got beets and they ate them. B'lamelech, and happens to be that we ate the beets without salt. And if we ate with salt, we'd be even glowing more. Amrei Machonusa Rabbi Yehuda Moreh V'Rave. A woman, a Machonusa. Generally speaking, Machonusa is a reference to not just any woman, but a wealthy woman, matron. Right? So matron. So so she says to Rabbi Yehuda, you're a more, you're a more halacha, meaning you're a posek. And meanwhile, Rave, seems like you're a little inebriated, right? Seems that way. Amrle himnusa biyada dehi yisasa iti imna elikidush v'avdalta v'arbe kase. So he says to this woman, I'm going to make you the following promise. Here's where I imbibe. Here's where I drink wine. I do so for Kiddush. I do so for Havdalah. I drink the 4 cups of wine on Pesach. V'chargoni tzidai min Pesach aratzeres. And my head hurts after Pesach for the next 50 days.
Does this mean that he never used wine for benching?
Could be. Could be. It's unclear from the Gemara whether you need wine for benching. Right? Obviously, the Rishonim feel that you do, but it's not clear from the Gemara. So anyway, so the... he's basically saying to this woman, I don't drink. Right? Kiddush, Havdalah, and 4 cups of wine and Pesach. Elachach masadim tari panav. In terms of my appearance, I'm glowing as if I'm inebriated. Chach masadim. In other words, it has to do with the fact that I'm amassed a certain amount of wisdom, and that's the part that's glowing inside of me. Okay, let's stop over here. We'll pause. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Amalu Hatsuduki. We'll pick it up from there. Okay. Again, I know the end of today's daf just kind of seemed like, you know, how to eat, what to eat, right? Spoon, fingers. But again, it all has to do with a general Torah personality. Okay, we finished the sugya of the just a summary. We finished the sugya of the end of the fifth parak. A difficult sugya, admittedly, about secondary beneficiary, about a Maisa Kinyan taking place now, the effect occurring later on, the debate between Rav Nachman and Rav Ashi. Okay, right, something where really needs much more attention than we gave it. Even though I spent 2 days on it, it needs more of our attention. And then today's daf dealing with the general rule of by Nedarim Mehochan Achalashim Bnei Adam. We follow the general definitions of how people speak. The Gemara did suggest that maybe Tanakh is going to be our guide, but the Gemara rejects it. The Gemara says that's not true. When, by Nedarim we follow Lashem Bnei Adam, and then the Gemara then got into a discussion of what foods are generally good and what foods are generally not good to eat, and how to eat the foods. And okay, more of that coming tomorrow.